part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
Shall we begin with the interview?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, let's just get started with the interview. this is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. My name is Christian Horn. I have on the line a very special guest. I have writer Allison Shelton, right? Did I pronounce that correctly? Nailed it.
Yes.
I'm getting better with my name pronunciation, although your name is easy to pronounce, but not to bash anyone whose name isn't. But to get started right off the bat, Allison is the writer and creator of a book called Reburn. And I like to let people know right off the bat that Reburn is on Kickstarter now for issue number 2. And I have read the first issue. Thank you so much for sending it to me.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you getting in touch. And the first issue is fantastic. I actually just read it again this morning. It is a beautiful work of art. When you sent it to me, I open these things up quickly, you know, when I get them and I just take a cursory glance. And when I first saw it, I was just like, oh, this looks great. So, you know, that was one step, you know, in your, you know, one good notch in your belt, I should say. I was looking for a good phrase to put there. But, you know, then I read the story and, you know, the story's really great too. So, you know, you nailed it right off the bat with the first issue. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, it is beautiful. I mean, that was important to us, that it felt like that the story and the images grab you. And Elise McCall, the artist, is I'm a fan. I read a book she drew for Chelsea Kane, Maneaters. And we reached out to her after reading that. And we're thrilled that she's a part of the team. And she's just, I mean, I can't say enough laudatory things about her. She's so talented.
Yeah.
And she brings so much to the process. Like, she's the real deal.
Did she, sorry, I'm scrolling through your Facebook page. Did she, oh, somebody else did the colors too. Hillary Jenkins.
For issue 2. Oh, actually, for issue 2. Issue 1, Elise did the colors.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So she, but that was a lot. We
sure.
had a lot longer time to do it too, issue 1, because of COVID and whatnot. So with issue 2, we brought on Hillary Jenkins, who's colored a bunch of books. And she actually paints. So her process is pretty labor intensive and really interesting. She's a painter, so she paints the colors, and she's shared some process, and it's gorgeous.
Oh, so will the look between the first and second issue change a bit because of the difference in coloring?
It does change, for sure. Yeah,
okay.
And luckily we also changed location, so it feels motivated. It's not just like a random change.
Gotcha.
So it'll be good because we come out from underground where we are for a good chunk of issue 1 and come out into the plains and nature, and it matches Hillary's style really well.
Oh, nice, so, nice, nice.
Yeah.
Well, either way, the first issue looks great. What you can see on the Kickstarter of the second issue looks great.
Thank you.
Why don't we tell people what Reburn is about? I mean, I read some of the, you also sent me a process packet, and that was really cool to have, you know, to get some of the background info and stuff like that on your creation of the book. But, you know, obviously people out there didn't necessarily get that unless they got your first Kickstarter, which, you know,
right.
we're trying to bring more people into the fold.
Yes, that's the idea, right?
Yeah, that is the idea. why don't you let people know who don't know what Reburn is about?
Reburn's about a superpowered woman, May, who appears after some cataclysmic floods that affect the way our planet operates.
Mm-hmm.
And she helps form this sort of idyllic society called the Unity, but then disappears. And this book picks up when she reappears, and people want to find her because they want to, you know, change the way the world order is. And she's got a lot of things to deal with. She needs to find her family. She needs to deal with what's happened to her. And what's fun about the book is there's a lot of action, and we're not really sitting with all the sad stuff. We know what happened. We can feel what happened, but this is the part of her life where she gets to put it back together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like that a lot.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting to me because, you know, when I was first reading the book, there's a bit of a description as to the background of the world. And that threw me off a little bit because I was like, wait, did I miss something? Is this like another chapter in an ongoing series that I missed? Because, you know, with Kickstarter books, it's obviously I could have missed something because, you know, unless you're plugged in, you may not know. And I had only heard you contacted me through Instagram and I was like, oh, okay, let me check this out. It, you know, sounds like a good book. And obviously, you know, you had Carla Nappi as sort of like a reference to go to, and she does great stuff. So I was basically like, okay, yeah, let me sign on to this. So I was a little bit like thrown off. And then I started reading the story and there's a little bit of like a dreamlike quality to the opening of issue one. And I was like, is this a dream? Is this like really happening? And then as the story went on, it kind of got grounded. So there was a part of me where I was like, oh, you know, where am I? But, you know, when I went back to the beginning and I was like, oh, this is like the Star Wars crawl, like at the beginning of Star Wars, like this is this is telling me, you know, the Empire, blah, blah, blah. And Princess Leia stole the plans and, you know, stuff like that. And I was like, oh, OK, this makes, you know, more sense to me now, like when I went back up. But at the same time, it was still like there was a part of me that is that was found it intriguing. Because I was wondering if you could have told that story without the crawl. But once I finished it, I was like, yeah, yeah, it's totally fine. Like everything fits. So can you speak to the opening of the first issue a little bit? Like what the choices were behind that?
Sure. We definitely wanted to toss you into the action right away.
Yeah.
And we wanted like, initially we thought we would just do the first five pages as a pitch. So we wanted the first five pages to have a lot happening.
Sure.
And then COVID happened and we decided to do the whole book.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to spend a lot of time with setup. I do like stories that toss you in. And I think a lot of comic book writers I admire sort of, you just go with it.
Yeah.
Like you trust them and you believe that they're going to give you a solid payoff. Mm-hmm. And, that's my goal.
Yeah.
And I like the feeling of like the puzzle piece of comic books. I think most, in my opinion, like very successful ones, you don't actually know what's going on until the end. And I like that. I also like it if it feels like you're getting more out of repeated readings because, you know, you're putting down money for this book and it's cool if you're seeing more, with repeated readings or when you go back and read it after you've read other issues, like, oh yeah, this was here, you know, this was planted. This was all thought through. So it was just, we felt like it was the most powerful or like exciting way to start it. And at least when she first read the script, because we just, you know, approached her cold. She read the script and she was like, oh wow, things happen. You know, you'd be surprised how many issue ones, particularly indie ones, like nothing happens. You know, people talk about what might happen at some point, but not a lot happens. She's like, and so much good stuff happens. so she was excited to draw it too. And that meant a lot to me, actually, hearing that from her. Because the people, you want the people who work on, who you collaborate with, to be excited about it and to feel like we're each making each other better. And I do feel like Elise made the book better, you know, and like it just, it was a great creative collaboration. So I don't know if that really answered your question, but
no, I mean, it definitely does. I mean, it's funny when you say like a lot of first issues, like nothing happens. There's a part of me that's like trying to think back and I'm like, is it like Seinfeld, nothing happens? Or is it like, you know, like, because
no, I think it's status quo. Mostly is what it is. It's set up. And then at the end, maybe you get a tease of like, oh, something's going to happen. But the reality of Kickstarter is like, particularly, but really honestly, in issue ones in general, like there's a huge drop off between issue ones and issue twos, buyers, by readership. Because there's so many great books out there.
Yeah.
And so you have to really, I think you have to try your best to hook readers. You can't assume their loyalty. You have to earn it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, particularly on Kickstarter, right? I mean, it seems like mm-hmm. everybody's like running there, and it's mm-hmm. not like necessarily on Kickstarter, the price point for books is low, mm-hmm. particularly if you want the printed option. So yeah, you definitely mm-hmm. have to sort of have like something really great, like right out of the gate. And mm-hmm. I will say that, you know, that first issue was definitely something where I was like, oh, okay, I want to check this out and, you know, mm-hmm. see where this goes. So I did contribute to issue two. Actually, I contributed to issue two, you know, issue one sight unseen. So I, you know, that'll tell you like how good it looks on Kickstarter.
Thank you.
So you were just going to dive into the action and stuff like that. But did you ever worry about anybody like maybe being disoriented a bit and being like, wait, what is this? Like, who's the hero? Who's the villain? Because there's mm-hmm. some really interesting mm-hmm. sort of set pieces where there's, you know, the protagonist is female and it seems mm-hmm. like she kind of doesn't know exactly what's going on. And, you know, that's great for like the opening of a book. It's kind of like, what is happening? What's going on? And then that particular male character becomes kind of like abusive and like mm-hmm. Towards her, you know, in the beginning of the book. And I was like, whoa, what's going on? You know what I'm saying? And so were you mm-hmm. ever concerned about maybe that, was that purposeful were you ever concerned about people maybe being thrown a bit by the story and not, because sometimes it's a lot of faith to have in a reader to, you know, say like, we're just going to throw you in the middle. Mm-hmm. we're not necessarily going to explain everything, although the crawl, you know, does a bit mm-hmm. towards that. But you know, there's a school of thought of like, hey, like if you give them too much of a curveball in the beginning, mm-hmm. you might scare them off. Any thoughts mm-hmm. on that?
I mean, I think you're not going to please everyone.
Sure.
Like you just have to know that right off the top.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people who use Kickstarter are very savvy about sure. comic books. And we did do that crawl, and then we have that first page, which actually wasn't in the original script with her nemesis.
Oh, interesting.
Because we were trying to give people a way in and to give them clues then to like touchstones to come back to. I guess I've been writing a long time mm-hmm. and I don't really think having how to say this. I don't think having a story about a woman in post-apocalyptic world is like super original, right? Lots of people do it. It happens, you know. So the world itself, I feel, is well developed, and I'm proud of it. But
sure.
what is special about this book are the characters.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to spend as much time as possible with them.
Yeah.
And their growth and their relationships, and also Elise is so talented at world building, but she's also great at relationships. She yeah. loves to draw people in relationship with each other.
Yeah.
So I think that's just, it's a choice we made. So I think it's embracing like, okay, comic books are full of, honestly, storytelling is full of tropes, right?
Yeah.
Things happen that have happened in other books and other universes. So I'm not reinventing the wheel, but what I'm bringing is this specific vision, these sure. people in this world. So I think we invested in that. We said, this is what we have to share. This is what's special. If you're here for this, then this is the book for you. But, yeah. you know, if you're into like, you know, when I open up, my husband and I joke about it, when we open comic books and it's just like words.
Yeah.
We don't want to read it. You know?
So wait, as a writer, explain that to me, because are we talking about like Brian Michael Bendis, like too much dialogue?
No, I like Brian Michael Bendis. I like his dialogue. There are certain... Yeah. books. I'm not going to name names, but it's sure. just like, it's a comic book.
Yeah.
So I want a big chunk of it to be visually engaging and
sure.
like blow my socks off, ideally. To be
yeah.
like, whoa, I wouldn't have thought of this.
Yeah.
Being told this way. And yeah. why is it a comic book?
Yeah.
If it's just a bunch of words,
yeah.
well, then why is it a comic book? You know? And I think, you know, I'm definitely someone who's show don't tell in my writing.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, that's just how I feel about things. And I think, and I trust readers for the most part. I think, you know, readers are pretty smart. Yeah. And they like to feel smart. And they like the pat on the back of like, at least I'll speak for myself. I like it when I figure something out.
Yeah.
I like it when I'm like, oh, I saw that coming. You know,
yeah, of course.
It makes me feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting that you bring that up, like, because there's a balance, right? Like in comics, mm-hmm. like I feel like a big part of it is like the art, right? Like that. I mean, I'm one of those readers who like, I'll get sucked in by the art, and I can't tell you how many times I've been sucked into a comic by the art and then read it and been like, you know, that was okay. Like,
you're my husband.
especially since I've been reading for so long, like since uh-huh. I was like 10 or 12 years old, and mm-hmm. you know, I'm in my late 40s now, and mm-hmm. You know, I'm very much like, I haven't read everything. I'm not like Mark Wade, but I mean, I've read enough to where I'm like, okay, I've seen this before. But
for sure.
I have been reading a lot of like old comics lately, and mm-hmm. The thing is like, there's a lot of like dialogue panels where mm-hmm. it's like they are explaining a bit of what's happening on the page. But the thing of it is like, I kind of miss that a bit because mm-hmm. a lot of new comics have kind of jettisoned that as well. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. those books were made for like a younger audience, right? Or at least like young,
for sure.
early teens. And I think it's weird. I think part of the agenda was to get kids to read, you know, without mm-hmm. maybe them knowing it. And then a lot of it was they didn't have the technology that we have today, where it's like they would send out the script, you know, the artist would work on it and they would get it back and be like, oh, crap, like this is not exactly like how do I make this kind of work? Right. You know, as far as totally. Dialogue. But there mm-hmm. is something about. Being able to sit with a comic and taking your time and reading it. And I feel like a lot of comics today, it's like you pay like $5 to $6 now and you're done in like less than five. You know what I mean? There's not a lot
totally
of stuff to linger
on. I know what you
mean. Am
I
making
sense? It is definitely a balance. Yeah, you're definitely making sense. There are some books on the other extreme that you're like, oh, there were 8 words in this.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, literally like I read a comic recently. It's a very big popular comic. And, maybe, you know, like 50 words, like the whole thing. I mean, it was lots of awesome action.
Yeah.
And that's obviously what people are there for.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a balance. And it's funny you say that about those older comics, because my son was reading a bunch of like, you know, Golden Age, Silver Age, like reading up like around on old comics. And my husband was like, oh man, I can't. Like, you know, I can't read those. But I also think, I mean, just listening to you say that, I think we weren't also as a audience as savvy about the tropes. Like explanation was necessary.
Yeah.
We had to explain, okay, these are their powers. This is how they operate. And also I think there was a much larger barrier to entry, particularly obviously for adults, right? They were like, this is nonsense. I'm not reading these comic books. So people really had to, okay, this is how the powers work. This is when they don't work. This is when people really needed it spelled out for them.
Sure.
Where now it's like, oh, cool, some stuff's happening. You know, I mean, and I honestly think that's a byproduct of the movies.
Yeah.
Because people watch those movies and like nothing is explained.
Yeah.
There's no like, nobody seems uncomfortable with like that none of it's believable at all. Like it doesn't need to be rooted in any kind of world building, really. Like just crazy stuff can happen as long as like it looks cool, we're it. So I think there's also a balance to strike there. And I was saying this to another person, like I like books where I know the creator knows what they're doing. Like, I'm a huge Brian K. Vaughan fan and, you know, lots of stuff happens, but I always know he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And that to me is the ideal. I don't want it to feel like just chaos of like, oh yeah, they just threw a bunch of stuff into the pot and like mixed it up. There's, you know, like you want it to feel like there is logic. And I do hope that part of the reason I sent you the process packet was because I think it shows like there is a world being built. There is logic. A lot of things were thought out and discussed.
Sure.
And we're proud of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, this is a big world and And it's fun to be in a position where we get to expand and create and make choices that we are intrigued and interested by and aren't being made by editorial or, you know, marketing or
merchandise. No, it's interesting. I like the point that you've made about the films. And one of the things, I mean, I'm a fan of documentaries and film and stuff like that. And one of the things I've thought about doing for Part-Time Fanboy is like doing something with like a YouTube channel and maybe making like mini documentaries and stuff. But it's like everybody's doing that. But the one thing that I've learned through making presentations for my like day job and stuff like that is, you know, the films have the benefit of movement, right? Like where it's like, we're going, like things keep, as long as you keep, you know, the pacing going, the audience doesn't necessarily have time to sit and ask, like, why don't Cyclops's beams bounce back in his face? you know, like stuff like that. Like they don't have time to like sit and think. And I think with comics, what's really great about comics, and it's like Will Eisner, right? Which is basically like, it's a language where your brain from frame to frame is filling in the action, right? Like, so that helps with the imagination. But it also, the kind of a bit of the weakness is if the creators don't know what they're doing, then the reader has enough time because it's at your pace, right? And the reader has enough time to be like, hey, wait a minute, why don't Cyclops's beams just bounce like right back? You know what I mean? And so it's interesting like how, depending on pacing and stuff like that, you know, film kind of has a bit of an advantage, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
And it's not just the visuals. I was thinking as you were saying that, excuse me, it's the sound too. See one of those movies, it is a full experience.
Sure.
There is no time. Not only is there no time to think, like there's, I mean, your brain can't function in that way. You know, you're just swept up in it. It's a spectacle.
Yeah.
That's what they're going for.
Yeah.
And they do it successfully. They have a formula. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
No, comic books are a very different experience. And I think it's important to continue, you know, obviously people have these conversations, I feel like, around what's happened at DC or what's happening at DC. And it's like, you know, you have to still create original content. It can't just be about movies and products. Sure. And, you know, like, it's still important for these characters to expand and grow in the comic book form.
Yeah.
Because that is the original IP. And I think you feel it. I don't know. I am much more invested in the movies that feel like they're grounded in the characters and not just there, just as spectacle.
Sure, sure. Oh, yeah. Totally. Well, there's character development and growth, right? I mean, it's interesting. I wanted to go back a little bit to something that you said before, because you had said, like, we're not, like, reinventing the wheel or having a female character in a post-apocalyptic setting isn't necessarily new or something like that. But it's interesting because we talked about Black Widow a couple of weeks back and, you know, we saw the movie. And I guess one of the things that we discussed it on the podcast, one of the things that kind of came up and comes up in the discussion of Black Widow is how certain people, you know, maybe at Marvel or one person who might've been the head of Marvel was like, female action movies won't draw in an audience or make money
for
and
sure.
stuff like that.
Yeah. And they said that.
Yeah. And and to me that comment is absolutely ridiculous and nonsensical because that's, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time is La Femme Nikita. And
oh, me too.
Yeah.
Huge fan.
Oh, I love that movie.
Even though it's so good.
Yeah, even though Luc Besson himself has become a bit of a problematic character.
Oh, he's so problematic. You completely have to separate the film from anything he has to say. Because everything that comes out of his mouth is like, oh God, no.
It's so hard. But I mean, I think that had to be beyond like sort of like B or grindhouse movies for me had to be one of the most powerful like film. I didn't know what I was getting into when I went to see. I had no idea what it was about. I just walked into a theater. I was supposed to meet some friends in Manhattan, like in a couple of hours. And I was like, I got nothing to do. Well, why don't I just go see this movie? The theater's right here. And like one of those days where I used to have free time,
burn. What's that
like? Yeah, exactly. And ever since I saw that, and then, you know, obviously you've got like the latest Mad Max movie and stuff like that and follow-ups. And to me, the idea of you know, particularly, and I don't mean to be sexist or anything like that, particularly sort of like the sexy female protagonist. Like, how could you not think that that was going to make money, you know, as long as it wasn't all about that, right? And so can you speak to that a little bit? Because I think like Reburn, it's not only just female centric in the comic. And I don't want to, you know, people are like, oh, is it woke or whatever? It's like, shut up. You know, I don't even like, that's so dumb to even like discuss that. But it's also an all female team. So, yeah. I mean, if you could speak, and you're also, you have a background in screenwriting, correct? And filmmaking. Yeah. So there is a part of me that's like, I just wanted to get your thoughts about that because, you know, I mean, for me, as a guy, an old guy, you know, women or girls didn't read comics when I was a kid, and it's now my daughter loves them, and you know, several years ago, the big joke I always used to make when I would go to Borders, you know, Borders were these bookstores that old people went to.
I know Borders.
Yeah, and they, you know, the aisles were full of like teenage girls like reading manga, and I would joke with my wife like, where were these girls when I was like 15? Like, you know what I mean? Because so
you have to convert them, Christian. Like my husband converted me.
Oh, really?
We started dating in film school. Yeah, he was like, you got to read comic books. You love movies. You got to read comic books. I was like, oh, come on. You know, like, this isn't for me. But, you know, I credit Brian K. Vaughan and Why the Last Man.
Sure.
And Brian Michael Bendis and Alias. Those two books.
Oh, wow.
Got me reading because I was like, oh, look, a book that's actually for me, not one that I have to like take bits and pieces of to feel like it's for me.
Yeah.
The whole thing is for me. And I liked Warren Ellis, which, you know, not anymore, but I liked those books too. What a waste. And,
well, what can we do about Warren Ellis? He was never going to come on my podcast, so there you go.
Right, so you're not burning anything.
Yeah.
So what is the question, Christian?
Well, just the question is approaching, I mean, what are your thoughts on just like female protagonists and the way that society just is, or used to be kind of like, well, you know, and you've got a book full of that and, you know, it needs to be there. You know, were you worried about it? Were you scared about it?
I mean, this is the way I've always written. And it was funny. I was talking to my friend, Anjali Bamani, who's involved in this Kickstarter, and she voices like Symmetra on Overwatch. And she does. And anyway, she's amazing. And we were talking about it and she was like, oh, this idea is so like of this moment. And I said, oh, that's really lovely. Cause I've pretty much been writing things that people were like, oh no, not yet. You know, like we're not feeling this. Yeah. This is too much like woman. This is too much. Like, cause I initially wrote something from this universe a long time ago. Uh-huh. One of the characters, I wrote a screenplay around her. I mean, when I was in film school and I got a lot of encouragement from some of my professors, like, keep doing this. This, you will find. But when I was doing it, I was very, honestly, very inspired by La Femme Nikita.
Sure.
Like, I saw that movie and thought, like, oh, this is what I want to see. You know? And I have had trauma in my life. And I don't think, there's enough of women acting out these things. I think it's very cathartic for a woman who's been through these things. And when May acts out this act of revenge in issue one, it's cathartic.
Yeah.
Watching it, writing it, drawing it, we all felt the power of it coming from women writing it. And it's very, you know, we're very centered in the female gaze. We're all women.
Yeah.
And yes, May is hot and she's gorgeous and she's sexy, but that's not all she is.
Sure.
And I think that's really important to us and to say that we can be many things. And I think that honestly, when people say stuff like, oh, women-centered action, there's no place for that. I agree with you. And my husband has said to me so many times, like, how dumb are these guys?
Yeah.
What guy isn't like, oh, like, I mean, the NRA has a whole brand of women with guns. Like, obviously there is an audience for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
People are into it. And like, you see a movie like Charlie's Angels, the original.
Yeah.
Like, it blew up. Because people were like, oh, this is fun. Like, and yet it's like they have such a heart. I mean, it speaks to a larger business issue of, I mean, I'm sure you've talked about on this podcast, like things become derivative very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with women-led action, it's like they only know a few flavors and they can't really like think outside of that.
Yeah.
And so it feels like, oh, it's got, you know, there's just not as much, there's not as much of the spectrum like there is with male superheroes, right? We have sure. all kinds of different like choices, but with women, it's like avenging angel.
Yeah.
Hot sort of goofball.
Yeah.
Those are the two choices.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
there's just not like, and that's part of what I'm trying to do here. It is a book full of women in action, and they're all different kinds of women.
Yeah.
And the men are too. Like it's, I think so many people are drawn to post-apocalyptic worlds because survival is in, you know, baked into the pie, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like you, cause you want in a comic book or a movie or for things to be happening, for people to be fighting for what they believe in. And at least for now, we're not doing that here, right?
Yeah.
Like we're not having to physically fight for what we believe in.
Yeah.
We're like filling out surveys online.
Yeah.
And going to protests, but
yeah.
we're not having to, have action behind that, this kind of action. And there's something about seeing people act out our ideals.
Mm-hmm.
It's very engaging.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of us want to believe we would make those same choices, right? We
yeah.
would fight for what we believe in.
For sure.
So I think it's goofy. I think there's plenty of space for women to be in action. And I think oftentimes for me in the Marvel movies, the lack of them, it's significant.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And that all those women had to come together and go to them and say, you need to make a woman Marvel movie. Like, why does yeah. that even need to happen in this day and age? But it did.
Yeah.
And Captain Marvel's a great movie, and I haven't seen Black Widow yet. I'm sorry, but I am reading the Kelly Thompson book right now.
Wait, what was that last? Sorry, I didn't hear
that. I am reading Black Widow, the Kelly Thompson, Casagrande. Are you reading that?
No, I'm not. The last Black Widow I read was...
It's really good.
Oh, okay. I read the Mark Waid, Chris Samney, you know, run with the Red Room and all that stuff. That stuff was great. Yep.
It is. I mean, Samney is the
yeah.
beautiful. Are you reading, is it Fire? What is it? I'm blanking. The new book he's doing with,
like Firewalker or Fire. So, yeah, Fire. Yeah. I can't remember the name.
Totally blanking.
I have the
I'm
first issue
too,
and it's on
like
it's, I have the first, trade and it's on my, to read list. It's on my
beautiful.
To read stack. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's really gorgeous.
Yeah. Well, Chris Samney to me is just, he's just like a god.
Right.
Like, he's just amazing.
Yeah. I mean, he has.
I look at his stuff and it's so funny because to me, it's like, it looks simple at first glance and you're just like, no,
yes.
you know, it's just like, yeah. this is a lot, but, one of the things you mentioned was sort of like trauma and, you know, talking about stuff like that. And the thing that, it's funny because you would think that the female experience or the female lens and something that I learned quite recently, I mean, I think that we're all sort of like coming to terms with a lot of stuff that's happening in our society.
Sure.
And one of the recent shows like Lovecraft Country,
that
mm-hmm. just like, I mean, I grew up in, you know, the New York, New Jersey area and I had,
you know
black friends and stuff like that. And they would, mm-hmm. they were the ones who instructed me on stuff like Public Enemy and like, don't trust the police and, you know, mm-hmm. things like that, that I didn't know growing up mm-hmm. in like suburban New Jersey. Right. And so, and I would see incidents of racism, but for some reason, like something like Lovecraft Country really awakened me to the sort of societal trauma that black mm-hmm. people must have been living through. Like more so mm-hmm. than anything in recent memory, mm-hmm. know, in the 50s, 60s, and even today. And while mm-hmm. I was watching it, because I have a wife and a daughter, and I was raised by a single mom, you know, there's a lot of me that was thinking like, man, this is the same for women, right? It's like women couldn't even have their own credit cards until like what, the 60s or 70s, you know, the right to vote at the turn of the century, you know, permission from husband. And I just, it's so funny to me that storytelling and film or any medium would not just want to take those, you know, things and run with them and tell stories about them, right? I mean, it's crazy.
I agree. And why wasn't Lovecraft Country renewed for a second season after it got like 18 Emmy nominations?
It
was such a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
And I was watching it at the same time as some friends, you know, and we're all texting each other. And we actually got on a Zoom afterwards to talk about it. And it was such a powerful show. And it's a shame. And
I agree.
I don't know. I think... I mean, I've been involved in, I went to USC for grad school, for film school. And it was funny. When you were saying something, it made me think of when I was first making like my first, because you're your first class where you make a bunch of, and I'm old enough that we were making them on Super 8 before they made the transition to digital. and a guy in my class saying, I don't really like your movies, but the chicks are hot. So just keep it that way. Yeah. And that was, and nobody said anything like, oh, that's inappropriate. Or, I mean, that was completely like acceptable. And, that was a lot of the feedback that I received from my peers, that if I wanted to make things, they definitely needed to feature, you know, hot women. And I really internalized that. And USC was hard for me. I was successful there, quote unquote, but, it was not, it was not a welcoming space for people who were even a tiny bit outside of what's considered commercially viable.
Yeah.
And I think that's a larger, that's how the film business, and I mean, to the comment, all of the businesses sort of behave. And I think it has changed a little bit. And I have some very successful friends who are not white men in the business, but I know they've had to work, you know, very hard.
Sure.
Everyone has to work hard, but, they have to work really hard and be at the top of their game, always.
Yeah.
I don't really have an answer. It's a source of wonder and frustration, and has been. And that's part of the reason we sort of took this outside of any kind of structure. Jess, my business partner and the editor producer on this, she's worked in television, for a long time and is often the only female producer, you know, out of 10 producers. And, we've really enjoyed just getting to do this our way and make the choices that we feel good about and finding our audience. It's gratifying. I know we're going to continue doing it. But it's kind of surprising. There aren't a ton of women, you know, even now. And, that's part of the reason that I even reached out to Carla. I'm impressed by her work, but it's like, okay, there's another woman doing this.
Sure.
Do you have any advice for me? Do you? And she was so generous with her advice and time. And I'm better at asking for advice and help than I used to be. So I don't know why people shy away from difficult topics when it seems like that would be a way for people to engage with the content.
Sure.
Well, you know, and make it feel less like, oh, I've seen this before. Like Lovecraft Country, you've never seen anything like it before, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was so singular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Blew my mind. No, I mean, that's sort of the thing is, you say like difficult subject matter, but if the society as a whole is sharing in this stuff, is it really difficult? Like, you know, I think other people from outside, and it's funny because I'm always aware of, you know, when I'm interviewing, I'm a guy. Like I was a guy, I was born in the 70s and I've lived through the stupid 80s and, you know, all, you know, I probably said really dumb, inappropriate things to women at some point. I think I'm a bit more open-minded and liberal because of my experience, you know, again, being raised by a single mom, being mm-hmm. half Hispanic and stuff like that, mm-hmm. half Latinx. Pardon me if I don't use the right phrase all the time.
Well, I think it's personal choice, Christian. So you're set.
Yeah. Well,
you can choose whatever you want. That's what I've been told.
Oh, okay.
When
great.
I say, should I say Latinx? Should I say Hispanic? It's like, you know, also it depends on your language you speak.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it's just like, you know, it's personal. What do you want to call yourself? You get to choose.
Yeah. 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 I just want to make everyone happy.
That's impossible.
Yeah. I know it's impossible. It's a struggle. It's a struggle to be sure. But I mean, that's the sort of thing is like when I'm asking questions, you know, there is a part of me that's always concerned, are you listening to me and being like, what a dopey guy? And then B, is there female listenership out there that's like, oh, what a dumb guy question, you know? And I'll cop to that. Like, I'll be like, yeah, dumb guy question. Like, you know what I mean? But it is a thing that, you know, obviously we all come from different experiences and I don't even know mm-hmm. where I'm going with this ramble, but it is very much like, at the same time, I'm just like, why aren't more people sort of like just open-minded to things outside of their own personal experience, you know?
I don't know. My kids like have a laugh at me and I'll say like, I can't believe those people like care, you know, because I have many friends who are LGBTQ and
yeah.
I'll say like, why does anyone care? Like that these two men are married or these two non-binary or whatever.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, Mom, people care. Like, how do you not get that? And I'm just like, yeah, I have to stop being surprised that people care. Because to me, it doesn't make sense. But I'm coming from a totally different place. Like, I was just saying this to someone. I look like, sound like, was raised like an insider, right? Like, I'm super white. But I never felt like I fit in. I never felt like an insider, even though I look like one. Yeah. I present like one.
Same here. Yeah.
So... yeah, I've always been fascinated by outsider literature, outsider stories. And so I'm sort of like dumbfounded.
Yeah.
By people who aren't. It's like, wait, but don't you feel like an outsider? Doesn't everyone on some level feel like this world wasn't built for me?
Yeah.
Even the people who appear to totally have it made.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's just, isn't that sort of the human condition to some extent? But maybe it's not. But I do think people who write and are artists and are creative oftentimes grapple with that, right? Because I'll speak for myself. I've always, since I can remember, been trying to make sense of the world. Because to be perfectly honest, it doesn't make any damn sense.
Sure.
And how do I organize it in a way that I can stay sane and be a decent person and have children and have hope that this world will be around?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, so how do you organize the world in a way that it can make sense? So telling stories helps.
Sure.
It helps me. It's selfish, you know, part of it is selfish.
Sure. Yeah.
This project, Reburn, doing it during the pandemic, I mean, it saved my sanity, I think, on some days, having something bigger than the day-to-day reality that we were all living with.
Yeah.
And having people to collaborate with and having this, like, I don't know, it was like, it was hopeful. It was saying like, oh, we're going to have this thing and we're going to share it with people. There's something like subversive about it in a way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm living beyond this moment. I'm going to choose to create something. I mean, cause you know, I'm sure you grapple with this. I think most creative people do. It's like, why am I even doing this? Who even cares?
Oh, you know? God, you don't even know. You don't even know. I pull out that club every day of my life. Like, why am I? Yeah. It's why I haven't finished so many things that I need to finish. It's just like,
it's easy
who cares?
To do, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think particularly in LA, right? Because I think we're also, and during a pandemic too, there is a part of me that's just like, you know, I think LA is I don't know if it's unique, but it's interesting in that everyone's so spread apart and it takes effort to get together with friends. You know what I mean? And it's kind of one of the reasons that I kind of founded this podcast was so that I could get, you know, con my nerd friends into just having a weekly conversation with me about, you know, something nerdy, as opposed to, you know, just calling them up and being like, hello, because not everyone seems to make time for that, you know, or have time for like, just like a little chat. Right. So, now, you know, why this podcast was born and, you know, but, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a struggle for everyone, right? To just get out of bed and be like, this is important. And maybe other people will like it. I mean, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think a certain amount of people are just narcissists. So that helps them. They're just like, it's amazing what I'm doing.
Yeah. I wish I was like that.
This, you know, but for those of us who aren't, I think it's a bit more of a struggle of like, I'll speak for myself. I completely let writing go when I had my children because I had had a lot of challenges. I faced a lot of sexism. It was just took its toll on me.
Well, and just having kids, come on.
And I was like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have anything to say. I'm done. And I had two friends, Jess, who's my business partner now, and my other friend, Jen, who produced an indie film I wrote before I had kids. And they were just like, yeah, whatever you need to do. Actually, she's the one who we're going to see tomorrow. They were just like, yeah, whatever you need to do. But when you do write something, just let us read it.
Sure.
Like, we're here. We're here when you want to read it, when you want to let us read it. Like, we do think you have something to say. And just having two people who gave a shit, it made a difference. And, and they still are my trusted readers, and their opinions and their support mean the world to me. And and I think sometimes we forget that. I certainly, like, going to USC, we were very much taught how to reach a large market, right? That's the goal. Like, how do you make a Marvel movie or blockbuster?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, okay.
And I realized years after I was there, most of those people in my classes weren't even my audience.
Yeah.
So who cares what they think?
Yeah.
But it took me years to figure that out. The guy who just wants the chicks and my stuff to be hot.
Yeah.
I'm not really writing for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, my work isn't really for him.
Yeah.
And I had to start realizing and thinking about, who is my work for?
Yeah.
Who am I trying to reach?
Yeah.
And that's whose opinion I want to hear.
Yeah.
That's who I want to hear. Oh, this doesn't quite make sense. Or I'd like more of this. But someone who doesn't even like what you're doing, I don't care what they think of it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound revolutionary, but for me, it was revolutionary.
Yeah. No, we all have to.
Because I think sometimes we try to please all the people all the time, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think that actually serves the product, really.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. No, I mean, you're absolutely right. And that's something that all, like you said, all creative types have to. And just as a person, right? Because I remember when I was younger and acting, there was, you know, you're all that. That is sort of kind of built in your DNA where it's like, did you like what I did? Do you like what I
for
do?
Sure.
Do you like what I, and then you sort of, and you're always dealing with an artist as an artist or as a creative or whatever. You're always dealing with certain people who are just like, oh, you're never going to make it. You're never going to do it. What's the point? Get a real job and stuff like that, which, you know, I did end up doing. I did end up getting a real job, you know, but I mean, the thing of it is to, like, sort of the best piece of advice I ever got when I was younger is, I think, just like you said, like, those people don't matter. Like, the ones who are like, they don't get it, then they don't get it. And they're never going to get it. You know what I mean? And stop trying to convince them that they are, you know, and focus on, you know, who actually gives a shit about what you're doing. You know what I mean? So
it's true.
Yeah.
But I think if you have that temperament, which I certainly did, of trying to get people who did not care to care about me. I mean, if we're going to get, like, armchair analyzing, you know, so it was like, I had to break a lifelong pattern of being like, hey, look over here. Love me. You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
okay, this isn't actually serving anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
So I need to get a new, a whole new outlook on
my problem everything. Is that I will go the other way, where it's like I shared a clip from The Jerk, the Steve Martin movie, a long time ago, where I will go the other way, where it's like, I don't need you. I don't need anyone. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like towards The Jerk when he's like losing all his money and he's like, I don't need this. Maybe I need this one thing. And, you know, okay, maybe this, but he's like, I don't need you. I don't need anyone. And, you know, it turns out that, you know, he's grabbing all these little things as he leaves the home. Like maybe I need this comb or, you know, whatever it is. But that tends to be, I tend to sometimes be a creature of extremes where it's like, I will go the other way. And that's harmful in itself too, where it's just like, you feel like, and we are getting into the armchair analyst section of the program, but it is very much
the last 10 minutes. Chris.
Yeah. Might as well get it in. No, I mean, it is very much like a knee jerk reaction where it can be hurting yourself, or it's just like, I don't want to hear from anyone, or I don't want anybody's help. And then you're like, why does nobody want to help me? Like, you know what I mean? So it's, it goes a little bit of both ways, but yeah, no, we've been talking a lot about, you know, you and how you came about and you know, your ideas on film and comics and stuff like that. But we haven't really dived into the story. So before we wrap up, and we want people to throw more money, I mean, Reburn
would be nice.
Yeah, it's already funded, but we still want people to throw money at this project before it ends, because more money is more better, as they said in an old movie. And I just mastered that.
And we're very excited about stretch goals. Yes. You know, we plan with stretch goals in mind. So yes. There's exciting stretch goals coming.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's the funny thing about Kickstarter. The goal is really not the goal.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
And you have to explain that to people who aren't savvy with Kickstarter. Like, yes, the goal's amazing. We definitely want to hit it. But you do want to hit these stretch goals too.
Yeah. 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 Or just make more money. We just want more money. That's what we want.
Kickstarter is a funny thing.
Yeah, Kickstarter is a funny thing. That's why I have not dived into it myself. terrified of it. But no, so I mean, you started this off like years ago as an idea for a screenplay. And originally it was called The Unity, right?
And yeah.
Yeah. And you had built a whole world and a whole like story around that, correct? Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, that's kind of like the background of what the world that is Reburn is, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Unity is part of Reburn. We realized as we were about to take this out into the world, the Unity is not really a very unique title. It's difficult to get domain names. When people search it, they get a million things.
Yeah, yeah. That sucks.
And let's do something a little more unique. And we also realized, like, the Unity is just a part of the Reburn universe, if you want to use that word. And so we don't want to call it that. And also this realization, like, the Unity is the oppressor. Let's not name our comic book after the oppressor.
Sure.
Let's name it after our protagonist.
Yeah.
May. And anyone who's trying to burn something down that no longer serves or didn't serve to begin with, but certainly doesn't now. And I think, and there's also this like feeling of rebirth, right? With the phoenix, kind of. She's rising from the ashes. Did you want to know more about what do you want to know more about, Christian?
Well,
does
no,
that
I
answer
just,
your question?
I think, no, I mean, to a certain extent. I mean, so like your screenplay world and all that stuff, the background, that is sort of like, you know, when George Lucas was like, yeah, I really planned 3 Star Wars movies, but he really didn't. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like made up as a, you know, he kind of had a framework. You really have the framework like built in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this, your book now is sort of, it's funny because like The Unity was not necessarily, I mean, it didn't become a movie or anything, but Reburn is a sequel to a thing, right? That
it takes pieces of the screenplay, and it's actually kind of fun because I'll go back and we'll like, you know, mine pieces like, oh, let's throw this in there.
Yeah.
It goes beyond what the script was initially, because I don't just have one arc planned, you know, it can continue on. And we can spin things off. We had a sort of like a serendipitous like thing happen with Laura Vandervoort, who was Supergirl on Smallville. And she's good friends with Jess. And she was like, oh, I want to help out in the first campaign. And I had this character, Poppy. I was like, oh, well, let's have her be inspired by, because we haven't drawn her yet. Like, she can look like whatever. She's the character.
Sure.
So we had Elise do like a book plate of her in the first campaign. And then she's in the second issue that the Kickstarter is happening now. And the draw-ins that people bought are in issue two. And Poppy has grown as we felt, you know, encouragement from her fans. And so we are hoping to then do a Poppy book that'll be like more of a Western, you know, like a, the tone will be different. It won't be as dark. It'll be more of like a adventure series. And so it's just like, that is the fun of being your own boss, is that you can be like, oh, wow, we're getting a lot of support and encouragement from these fans. Okay, well, let's do that thing, that part of the world. And then we'll still finish Reburn. This arc is four issues, and we're planning to finish it in the next Kickstarter. We're going to do a supersized issue three so that we can finish off the arc and get it to trade.
Gotcha.
So
it's, I mean, the book that I saw, issue one, looks fantastic, and it's very intriguing, and I'm wondering where it's all going to go. It's funny that you mentioned URL searches and Google searches as far as titles go, because like my own little comic, The Periwinkle Puss, it used to be called The Purple Puss, and you do not want to Google that, friends. Don't. I was like, nope, do not go down that hole. So that is one of the reasons. It's so funny because when I read like your process packet, I was like, oh, that's funny. They searched the Unity. And I'm sure there's all kinds of crazy, maybe religious stuff, like just around that name or whatever.
Justice
like,
League, right? It shows up.
Oh, yeah, like yeah.
Okay, great. I'm so glad we didn't call that.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's a whole like, years ago, it was a whole like editing data sharing thing, the Unity, where it was like all the computers were joined. So that's what I always thought about. Like, that's because that was something that was happening with like editing systems. Uh-huh, they were all hooked together with the Unity.
Oh.
So it's a, and like I think the domain name was like $1 million, you know, or one of those things. Okay, well, we don't want to do that.
Yeah, no.
And we did like an epic brainstorm with everyone on the team, and people brought a lot to the table, because I have to say titles are not my first favorite thing. I always feel like it could be better, but I'm actually really happy with Reburn, and I think it works and it's unique, and when you Google it, there are no other ones. So that's nice.
People put it in
like Reburn Kickstarter, they can find it. Who knows what you get. And I was saying to, you know, I know a lot of writers, and so they'll be like, oh, check my thing out, you know, and when it's named like cats, it's hard to find the thing.
Yeah.
Whereas
for sure.
It's named, you know, The Periwinkle Puss, I can find it.
Although
I couldn't read it. I wanted to read it.
I just thank you for pointing that out, because I was like, wait, what's going on? And I mean, it's not free on the, it was free on the site for a long time. And now I just put up the printed edition on Etsy, because I am working on chapter two, which hopefully doesn't take me another years and years, but the way it's going, but hopefully we'll be doing conventions again, and I'll have it out there as well. And then when
you going to go to the LA Con?
I don't know if I'm ready for that. And I don't think fall is going to be, I don't think fall, fall is coming and winter is coming, as they say. And I think things might get crazy again before they, you know, I don't know. I'm very worried. I think the virus has retreated, but LA is always hot. So, but numbers are going back. I don't know. I'm not ready to table at a convention again, I should say. And it seems like everyone's jumping in, and between you and me,
for sure.
I mean, convention tabling is expensive, and there's a part of me that wonders sometimes whether it's worth it. So I like to go to maybe smaller shows and stuff, but then
where
the bigger shows,
actual interactions.
But the bigger shows too offer you more opportunity to maybe make your money back, but then how do you make your money back with the table like being so expensive? Like it's just like it's a juggling act, and sometimes I just get frustrated by it. And then I'm sure you know, with, although you know, my daughter's a little older and more self-sufficient now, when you have kids it's like, okay, we got to make this, you know, Girl Scout thing. It's not, you know, or LA Comic Con used to be like on the weekend of Halloween or something like that, and I was like, that's not gonna work, because Halloween is, that's kids' time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's not going to work. So, but maybe. I mean, I don't even know if I could get a ticket now, like as far as, and then the table is probably totally out because I'm sure it's just swamped. So,
I feel you about the hesitancy.
Yeah.
For sure.
Are you going to LA? Are you going? Are you going to table or?
I'm not going to table. Gotcha, not ready either.
Yeah.
I think I'll go.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'll go. But I feel the same sort of, we were so conservative during the pandemic about what we did and who we saw and we're still, you know, we're still not very like, I mean, we do things, but it's just,
it's scary.
I have friends with long COVID and it's just devastating.
Yeah.
So I really would like to, I mean, I had a cold and I was like, oh man, I haven't been sick in a year.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not into this. I definitely don't want to get COVID. I don't like having a cold.
Yeah, no, me neither.
So it's just like, I'm really trying to play it safe because these things, they'll come again. Like, I can't live life like, oh God, I got to do it now. You know?
I'm also one of these people that doesn't like to be rushed. I have enough deadlines at work and stuff like that outside of it. It's just like, no, leave me alone. Like, I'm going to get, again, I don't need you. I don't need anybody to bring it back around. But no, if you do go and I end up going, let's make a point to like, just say hi on the floor or whatever.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Swing by. That'd be great.
I will. And I see you have a Hellboy poster behind you. I really feel like my husband and you would have a lot of affinity.
Oh, really?
He's a huge Hellboy fan.
I love Hellboy, but I lost track of it like a while ago. And I need to get back into them.
I think that's sort of the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
Make it sort of like, I don't know.
What did your husband think about that last Hellboy movie? Did he see it or?
I don't even think he saw it. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, it just was like, what is happening?
You know what? It's so funny because, and people are probably
going to hate. Now he's all Black Hammer all the time. I feel like he's moved his loyalty from Hellboy to Black Hammer.
Oh, really?
I feel like there's been a shift.
I've got to read
Black Hammer. We're like very Black Hammer centric.
I have not read Black Hammer. I got to read that book. I got to check it out. But all the other things I need to read.
Well, it's a never ending, right? I mean, that's the
it
reality.
Seems like
you can never feel caught up.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's one of the things as a fan I had to come to terms with is like, I'm never going to get caught up. So why am I focusing on the new stuff? I can wait and get the old stuff or just sit with the stuff that I have. And then I'll catch up. I'll get there. I'm like the tortoise now, not the hare with comics. I'm like, I'll get there, you know, have fun, everyone. I'll be there. You know what I mean? Or the grandparent.
That's good. I think also it's the Zen act for him of going to the store.
Sure.
Looking
through.
Oh,
I like that. Yeah.
He loves that.
Yeah.
He loves his store. He loves doing that. And I feel like it's like a childhood, like it's just, I don't know. It connects him with like his childhood self, and looking through the back issues.
So
it's just a.
Let me tell you that anytime we travel, I have to, wherever it is,
go.
I have to find a comic book shop and I have to go check it out. It's just something in my DNA. And my wife and my daughter are like, oh geez, he's got to find a comic book shop, you know, but it's just a thing. I like seeing different places. I mean, now in the US, it's a bit more homogenized, but we went to France and England like 2 years ago and I was able to find comic shops and I was just like, I mean, France was just amazing. It was just like the comic shops there were just like, oh my God, this is amazing. But
did you buy stuff and bring it back?
Oh yeah, like that's, I bought a ton of stuff. And the big joke was, you know, it's these beautiful French, you know, tombs, you know, not like these hardcover things. And I bought a ton of them and I had to put them in my backpack and carry them on my back. I broke my back bringing French comics to the US because I was just like, I love these. And I just wish I could.
Do you speak French?
No, I just wanted the art. I have so many French and I need to learn. I was trying to learn on Babbel. And but I just, again, it's just time, right? I picked up a little bit, but I wish I could learn French so that
Spanish,
I could
right?
read them. Yeah. I know it's supposed to be
wheelhouse.
Easy. Yeah.
It's in the
They say that it is, but
lots of times the tenses and stuff they use in comic books, I think, are challenging sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Like they say it's. My mother keeps telling me that because she speaks a bit of French, and she's like, "It's easy. Yeah. You should be able to." I'm like, "No, I you know, I picked up a little bit, but it's different enough." But in any case, yeah, Reburn is not a French book. Reburn is an American book.
Totally in English.
Totally in English. And Reburn issue 2 is on Kickstarter right now. Yeah. I have been speaking with Allison Shelton. Allison, thank you so much for coming on the show. I just really appreciate
it. Thank you, Christian.
No, and I appreciate you reaching out. And, you know, it's always great to hear from new creators, especially when a book is this good. Looks this nice and has as great a story as this is. So you should feel proud of your work and your whole team should be excited because I think, you know, you've got something here and it looks like, you know, I hope it just continues for the long haul, whether it's on Kickstarter or not.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. We are proud of it and it does matter, you know, like you want to be proud of the thing.
Yeah, of course.
And we are. And it's a good feeling. So thank you.
That's great. Well, again, the book is Reburn. It's on Kickstarter. Please go and support it. Again, my name is Christian Horn. This has been the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all that wonderful social media stuff. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Go to Kickstarter. Support Reburn. It's a great book. And we will be back soon with another episode. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
Part-time fanboy.com.